It's 12:44, and you're tuned to 90.7 KRWG Las Cruces. It's my pleasure to welcome back into our studios Mark Hosauer, cello soloist, and, let's just say cellist, because this weekend you're the cello soloist, but we've got you've got a lot of other hats that you wear. And Lonnie Klein, Artistic Director of the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra, welcome back to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Hosauer, let's just talk for a minute about this Schumann Cello Concerto. You'll be performing it tomorrow night at 7:30 and Sunday at 3 with the Las Cruces Symphony. My understanding, it was written in a blaze of creativity by Schumann, that was what he usually did, and he never got to hear it performed in his life.
That's right. He, as many composers, great composers, was never always 100% confident of a new creation, and so he didn't send it to his publisher until 1854, but by that time he was by his own request, been admitted to the asylum for his mental instability.
Probably bipolar, which might have been, in this day and age, treated.
Exactly. And I've heard both sides, you know, certainly humanly speaking, with modern medicine, he could have been helped in so many ways. Some people question whether that would have affected his, you know, creative output, because perhaps even his condition while he was alive was even an asset to these great bursts of inspiration that that came.
And this is a work that I understand he didn't like any applause, any possibility of applause between movements, maybe.
That's why it's seamless.
And there's no pause between.
There's no place to applause between the very beginning and end through three movements and a cadenza and a coda. Yes, he was not in favor of the 19th century practice of people applauding between movements, and he was also not a fan of recitative, which is kind of funny because bridges between movements and the cements in this piece are very much in the spirit of recitative. However, the cello is always accompanied by the orchestra and is never left to play alone very long, because Schumann really valued the music continuing uninterrupted, and that's why in operas he didn't like recitative.
Yeah, so explain that, because we usually associate that with a opera, as an opera term of sort of almost speaking.
Spoken,
during the opera.
Well, you know, many of the composers of the 19th century and even before and certainly after, you know, as an instrumentalist, they always looked to the human voice as the idol of what, you know, the human expression is, because, of course, it's the most uninhibited being connected, a direct part of the human body. And so, therefore, Schumann, in this piece, it's such a vocal piece, and with these recitative episodes, it's that brings an opera element to the concerto. There's also very much the lead element from all of his song cycles. I mean, it's just sung and spoken in a dramatic way from beginning till end, and really the cello is always at the forefront. It's lightly orchestrated, the piece, and there's really very little opportunity to be covered by the orchestra, and it's just I think one of the, it's just so probing. I find the piece is just so introspective and really searching in such a beautiful way and heartfelt way, so that it's just engaging from beginning to end. Another feature of the piece is that it just changes and evolves so quickly. I can play a phrase, and especially starting in the first movement, and there are, you know, four characters and pieces to that phrase, that, and it's always just, it's just so imaginative.
Let's talk a little bit about your teacher, Janos Starker, who passed away earlier this week, a great loss to the music world and part of a generation of musical giants, really. And he performed actually in this region many years ago with El Paso Pro Musica Chamber Festival. And anyway, was continuing to teach and be active right till the end, I think, teaching at Indiana University.
That's right. It was only this past fiscal year, or academic year, I should say, where he wasn't teaching. And his primary mission in life was to teach. And he always spoke about how he was very much concerned and interested in the future and in the historical idea of one generation passing on what they have inherited and developed to the next for the future and progress of music. And so he was literally teaching until he was simply physically unable to do so.
And what was he like as a teacher?
As a teacher, he was very demanding, but at the same time, very supportive. And I was just always so, he was just incredibly inspiring to be around. And I think anybody who studied with him can attest to that. I mean, he could also be on the order of severe, but never in a way, at least not to my personal experience, never in a way that I was discouraged or felt, you know, being put down. I was always felt very uplifted. His teachings focused on musical truths, which are, you know, as we know, you can't always define everything in the artistic world, but there are parameters and certain things that we know that are absolute truths, and focus on these truths, and then also on the teaching of how to play one's instrument to serve these truths.
So amplify that a little bit. Either give us an anecdote of him talking about musical truth, or what that might
mean.
Well,
he would, you know. What, you know, sometimes if you'd be playing something, for example, with the wrong musical stress, I mean, putting the wrong weight in somewhere, he would demonstrate how it might sound like something, another type of music or something unrelated. So he would use humor and sometimes a wry sarcasm too to demonstrate these things.
Well, I recall once my teacher Elsa Ludwig Vedder, I was doing the Brahms Sonata in E flat, and I missed a note. And she stopped me, and she just said simply, "Lonnie, there'll be no more of that."
Right.
So you really get the point. I mean, five words. I mean, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, it was definitely a teaching style. And he taught many generations, actually. I mean, when you think of all the decades he was teaching, so from when he first came from Europe, he was in, I think he was in a concentration camp.
That's right.
During the Holocaust.
Right, in Hungary. I mean, there's so many stories associated with that, but in relation to his teaching, to put some perspective to this, he started teaching when he was 8 years old. And people would travel from all over Hungary to have string players, not just cellists, but violinists and all types of string players, to have lessons with him because his reputation was such in the way what he had to offer and the way he could analyze and offer suggestions. And then he remained a teacher his entire life, and he was, I was at his house about a year ago, and a year and a half ago, on his birthday. And Jules Eskin called up, you know, the principal cellist of the Boston Symphony since 1964, and former principal even for a time in Cleveland, and then after he hung up, he told me that was his first student in America was Jules Eskin, and because Jules Eskin came to Dallas and auditioned for the last chair in the Dallas Symphony right after Starker had arrived and won the job. And so he was teaching him. But anyway, in terms of, you know, global significance, I am sure that of all the cellists alive, let alone the ones who aren't alive, that probably a third to maybe even as much as half of the cello world at some point encountered him, either studying with him or playing for him in a class, which is, it's unfathomable, really, just the extent to his influence as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. And you studied with him at Indiana University.
I studied with him at Indiana University.
I'm speaking with Mark Kosauer, who's the soloist this weekend with the Las Cruces Symphony, and we're talking about his teacher who passed away on this past Sunday, Janosch Starker. And Lonnie, let's talk with you just a minute, because we've got music of Robert Schumann and Chike 5, as they say in the...
Chike 5.
I don't know.
That's right.
Suddenly, that's what it's called. Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony.
Now
which
you know that, Leora.
Because I hang out with musicians.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that piece, this is the second or third time you're doing it, a really monumental symphony.
Well, it does actually have some significance for me, because in 1999, in March of 99, I auditioned for the Las Cruces Symphony position as the music director, and that was the audition piece. And we did do it in 2003, so it's been almost 10 years. But it's one of those staples of the repertoire that, you know, you just got to go back to and you learn from when you, you know, get away from it for a while. I think it's one of his great symphonies. And interesting, we were talking about Schumann. You know, Tchaikovsky did not embrace that symphony. He thought the Fourth Symphony was much better written. And he actually took it on tour, where he was the conductor, and toured in Hamburg and Germany and the Netherlands, and I think in London with the symphony. And he came back and he was, you know, sort of depressed because, you know, he didn't think the audience liked it. But of course they loved it. It's a wonderful piece, and it's a triumphant piece. And there's a common thread that runs through the symphony that you actually hear in every movement, even in the beautiful waltz movement. And that's that fate motive of yum, ba ba be, ba ba bum, ba. And it's a genius. I'm sure he took it from Beethoven, the fifth, because it starts out in, you know, in a minor key, and then of course that fate motive ends up in a major key.
The fate motive meaning like a knock on the door.
A knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And written obviously the latter part of his life. I think the last 4 or 5 years of his life before the sixth, of course. And then, of course, he died. We think perhaps drinking water that was laced with cholera. It's a beautiful symphony. It has moments of beauty, like his ballets, particularly the third movement. It's not scored with harp, which is unusual for Tchaikovsky. But the first movement alone has four themes, and you know those themes are so beautiful. And, you know, he was not part of the Russian Five, which I always thought was interesting, but he was embraced by his, the musicians, the people that attended concerts. Certainly the government obviously loved his music. And so I just think it's a wonderful symphony. I've been accused of being a communist because I play a lot of Russian music.
That's a little old now.
Yeah,
right.
We don't need to worry about that anymore.
Right.
And an interesting program to put Tchaikovsky and Schumann together, and both works with so much pathos, but also with
right,
a brighter.
And we were just talking about the connection between the two composers. Both studied law because their parents didn't want them to go into music. Both had, you know, bouts of severe depression. Both tried to commit suicide. So there's a common thread with that in this program. I don't program with some sort of theme in mind, but just the connection.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of interesting. I think what Mark said, you know, if there's medication now that he could have been bipolar, you know, there's medication perhaps to treat that, but it's you don't hear that in the music.
Mm-hmm.
No.
even in the first movement, where it's a little dark and heavy. And I just love the scoring, two clarinets,
yeah,
you know, and string accompaniment, that fate motive that runs in every movement, which is unusual.
Yeah
and
all
it
the
doesn't
way through.
Sound monothematic. It's mm-hmm. it's very ingenious in terms of the writing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And the Schumann also has just moments of utter pathos and then somehow brightens up towards the end.
Right. And there's humor throughout, and the last movement is very it's triumphant, it's very witty, and very episodic the way it's written. It's so interesting because if I would sit down and play, you know, the main solo lines by themselves, they wouldn't necessarily make a lot of sense to somebody listening to them because it's just so integrated with what the orchestra's doing.
Hmm.
The dialogue is really tremendous, and it's a very exciting and uplifting conclusion to what starts out as a very pondering and a turbulent beginning.
Hmm. And when did you first learn this piece?
When did I first learn the piece? Oh, that's actually a good question. I think I learned it as a senior in high school because I was engaged to play it with the Green Bay Symphony, and I'm originally from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. So.
Okay, so.
Well, yeah, what an honor, senior in high school.
You've gotten to play it many times. Mark Kosauer has been my guest today. He'll be performing the Schumann Cello Concerto tomorrow night at 7:30, Sunday at 3, with Lonnie Klein conducting the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra. Thanks to you both for coming in.
Thank you.